Yay, Mark. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Bill. It was lovely. Thanks so much. So it's great to see all of you here today. And I'm speaking about another superpower, and that is good boundaries. I don't know why people are laughing, but I think I understand. You know, the reason I'm speaking about it is that last week I was speaking about calling in the priceless divine, and I made a passing comment about boundaries, and I said to not set a boundary is actually a form of manipulation. And I was like, where did that come from, and what does that mean? So I'm speaking about that today, about how not setting a boundary is doing a disservice not only to yourself but to the other person, that boundaries really are a form of kindness. And I feel that I have the authority to speak about this with great expertise, because for many years I had absolutely no boundaries whatsoever. It's just something that I learned, and perhaps, I don't want to stereotype, but perhaps a lot of the women of my generation learned to just be nice, to be nice, at your own expense, and again, at the expense of the other. You know, I was very easily manipulated by people's guilt, by people trying to make me feel guilty, trying to blame me for their state of mind, trying to make me be responsible for their state of mind. I was manipulated by people's anger. If people were angry at me and wanted me to say yes, I would say yes just to make them stop yelling at me. You know, is that familiar to anybody? Right? Okay, good, good. I'm not just, you know, preaching to the choir here, although I kind of am because the choir's there, but yeah. That's a whole other topic. Anyway, so, you know, I struggled with this for years and wondered why I was not receiving the great life that I know is available to all of us, because really, you know, the Science of Mind teaching and other esoteric mystical teachings say that greatness and beauty and amazing love is available for all of us, but somehow this was getting in the way in my relationship. Something was getting in the way. Well, God so loved me, or love so loved me, that she sent me an opportunity where I was forced to learn about boundaries in a very big way. For 7 years, the 7 years before I came to this spiritual center, I worked as a trainer, as a corporate trainer for a medical device company. And it was a medical device that was an insulin pump. And if the device messed up, the person wearing it could be in serious trouble, or go to the hospital, or perhaps die. And one of my training jobs was to train the people who worked on the customer service helpline, to train people that were non-medical people to all about diabetes and how to manage these little complex computers that people with diabetes would wear. And so, as the trainer on the medical helpline, training people who didn't know anything about medicine and diabetes and computers and programming was a very challenging task, and some of them were not up to the task. So I, on a regular basis, had to fire people. Mm-hmm. What a challenging thing for somebody with poor boundaries. Because, you know, you want people to feel good about themselves, which is really code for you want people to like you, you know, right? Because if you are, quote-unquote, making them feel bad about themselves, then they probably won't like you. You want people to, you know, not blame you for their state of mind. And that was a huge part of the job, was when I would fire someone, it often turned into what we started fondly calling a blame the trainer firing. They would blame me that they were not able to master the skills, not only the skills with medical issues and computer programming, but also customer service skills. Like, if they fought with the customers, they had to go, okay? So I had that position, and I was really struggling with the boundaries, with the firing that I had to do. And, you know, sometimes it was my fault. Sometimes I was not a good match for a particular person. But most of the time, it wasn't. It was just that they were unable to master the skills, and they would have been far happier someplace else where they could have felt like a success, right? But I was still struggling with it, and I went and got some help with it, and I learned all about setting boundaries and how it works, and recognized also, again, that setting boundaries is actually a kindness. Because if I am not, setting boundaries is about expressing your truth in a kind and an authentic manner, and knowing that your truth is relative, and allowing the other person to express their truth, and then seeing what reconciles in the expression of both of those truths. It's also the gift of your authenticity to somebody, right? If I'm not setting appropriate boundaries, if I'm not saying what I truthfully feel, if I'm just going along to get along, if I'm just doing something so you'll stop yelling at me, if I'm taking too much responsibility for your state of mind, then you don't have the opportunity to work on that for yourself, right? Does that make sense? Okay, good. Let's all start doing that from now on, all right? I want to do, because boundaries can be a tricky topic for people in this culture, I want to do a little bit of an object lesson. So I'm going to invite, this is my favorite tool to describe boundaries, and I'm going to invite Jennifer Merlich to come to the stage, and we're going to give you a little lesson in boundaries, okay? You go first. Which one do you want? The big one, okay. So this may or may not work. I don't know. But anyway, Jennifer, would you just start hooping like you do? Okay. Oh, isn't that beautiful? So look at Jennifer. Look how sassy she is. And you can keep that up for a while, right? Yeah, good. So Jennifer is, this is a life well lived. This is a representation of a life well lived. Jennifer, look at that sexy thing. Okay, concentrate, Bonnie. This is Jennifer living in balance and harmony with all that is. This is Jennifer expressing her wholeness. Now I'm over here expressing my wholeness, maybe if I don't crash into anything. I'm expressing my wholeness. It's kind of having an issue with my mic pack, but that's okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. I can't really do anything as fancy as Jennifer. But let's say that I need something from Jennifer, and I come into her hoop space, and I'm like, Jennifer, I need this from you right now, right? We both fall apart, right? So would you hoop again, right? Yeah. We both fall apart, but she picks up her hoop again. She decides to maintain her integrity and her balance and her wholeness, but that's not enough for me. I want to manipulate her. I want to violate her boundaries. So I go up to her, and I say, Jennifer, I want what I want, and you are a selfish person if you don't give it to me. Sorry. Yeah. So... And you see what happens? Thank you. So stay up here for one more minute, if you would. Okay. So I hope that metaphor worked for you. But again, you have a right to spin your hoop, to have a balanced and a whole life, and a life that belongs to you, the authentic life that wants to express through you. And if somebody comes barging into your hoop space, into your boundary space, and says, I need this from you now, and if you don't give it to me, you're a bad person, right? Because that's often the implication that is expressed in manipulation. Then that messes it up for everybody. Not only does it disturb your hoop space, but it also disturbs the other person's growth and development. Okay? You got that? Before Jennifer sits down, she knows how to hoop really well, so I asked her if she would do something fancy. Get out of the way. She says she's a little out of practice. All right. Woohoo! Okay, yeah. Whoa! Thank you, Jennifer. You love this church, yeah. Yeah, well, we have more. Yeah. Note to self, if you want to get a standing ovation, bring a hula hooper. Okay, all right. Ooh. Is that God calling? Awesome. So, you know, the thing is that Jennifer, when I was coming into her hoop space, could have been extremely aggressive and said, stay back, you mamma mia, you know, stay back, or gotten really, really mad at me and tried to assert her boundaries that way, and asserted her boundaries that in the name of aggression, right? Saying that that's a good boundary. But aggression is not really a good boundary. That's also just manipulating back. You know how Martin Luther King said that you cannot drive out darkness with darkness, you can't drive out hatred with hatred? You can't drive out somebody else's poor boundaries with your own poor boundaries. That just escalates the situation. So the solution for boundaries to me, after having studied mystical theology for many years, is not using my aggression to stop getting somebody to do something that I don't want to do, but it's to use compassion. It's to use compassion. It's actually to move closer to the person. And let me back up a minute and give you an example of a situation that where I'm where I could be struggling with boundaries, but I'm not because I've done a lot of work on this. By the way, just in case you don't know, in a church, there are an occasional occasional incidences where somebody crosses boundaries. Really? I know. Now, for us, because we are such a loving congregation, it does not happen very often, but sometimes people want to come into the church and do various things, and when I say no, they get mad at me, and they make me responsible for their bad attitude. They wouldn't be mad if I wasn't so mean, right? And what I'm talking about mainly, for the most part, is people who insist on teaching, say, a seminar here. And there's one example of that going on right now. There's someone who is marketing us very aggressively with a seminar called You Can Have Whatever You Want. And Annette sends it to me, and I send it back to Annette, and I said, you know, just basically, I'm not sure if this is a good fit for us, and we don't really have the time and the schedule, but her marketing has been escalating in aggression, and finally Annette said, I don't know what to do with this person, and I wrote back to Annette, and I said, she probably thinks she can have whatever she wants. And see, that's one of the things, that's one of the mistakes that we make with the Science of Mind teaching is that we say we can all have everything without ever knowing how, right? That's a line from a song. We can all have everybody, everything without ever knowing how. Good. Good. But we can't have whatever we want at the expense of another person's happiness. Or at the expense, I wouldn't be miserable if she came here, but I have the whole well-being of the church at stake, so I think I know what the appropriate boundaries are, what seminars should come, when they should come. And, you know, part of the issue with that, the issue of I want what I want and you have to give it to me, is that people get very attached to the form of what things need to come in, right? When I occasionally would work with married couples, and I stopped doing it because nobody ever wants to do what I say, but they'd be in an impasse about something, and I'm like, just agree on a God quality. Just agree on a God quality and pray for that, and don't be attached to the form. Guess how many people did that? Not very many. But if you continue to cave into somebody's poor boundaries, then they will never get that lesson. They'll continue to attach to the form that looks like you. What a more beautiful thing to do is to rise up with compassion and understand them and do something paradoxical that causes them to look within, perhaps. Okay? I learned about compassion and rising up and paradox when I worked at Bellevue Psychiatric Hospital in New York City. Not only Bellevue, but other clinics. I've worked in many, many psychiatric facilities, including this one. No, kidding. Sorry. It just slipped out. I couldn't help it. I could help it. That's a lie. I could definitely help that. But anyway, I've worked, you know, with all kinds of populations. I worked in the prison at Bellevue, and I worked with the homeless people in Bellevue, and then I worked in very shishi medical clinics in Cedars-Sinai when they had psychiatry there with celebrities' children that were withdrawing from heroin, and you know, all of the above. And when you work in a psychiatric clinic, there are often situations where people become violent, and the staff needs to know how to stop somebody from being violent without hurting them, right? So there's this thing called management of assaultive behavior that I use for people when they are expressing poor boundaries in my presence. Before we get there, though, I'm going to show you the metaphor by having a little demo of management of assaultive behavior. Now, this morning, when we were doing our prayer circle, we pray in before the service, and I had already asked Brock to be the psychiatric patient, and then I asked, who wants to beat up Brock? And Jonna said she did. So I'm going to invite Jonna and Brock to come on the stage. Let's go up here. Let's come up on this part so everybody can see. And look how Jonna dressed. She's wearing her combat boots, right? Look at that. Yeah. So Jonna, I'm going to have you turn your back to Brock. And let's pretend you're a nice psychiatric nurse and you're getting ready for the medications and you're pouring the pills and everything. And good job. All right. Yeah, okay, I just thought of a really bad song that I wrote about that. So anyway, well, maybe I'll sing it later. Anyway, so Brock comes up behind you and he tries to choke you from behind. Look at that. Okay, so don't do anything yet. Okay, when you're being choked from behind, the temptation is to try and pull the arm away from you, right? To pull the arm away from you so you can get away. But the truth is that this muscle, the bicep, is very strong, whereas this muscle, the deltoid, is very weak. So what John is going to do is something paradoxical, something counterintuitive. She's going to step back and bump into Brock, knock him off balance. Are you getting this on film? Yeah. Okay. All right, she's going to knock him off balance, and then she's going to push his arm up like that and get away and run away. See that? Here, let me do it once. Brock, beat me up. I know you've always wanted to choke me as the board president minister, right? So you step back, you knock him off balance, and you get away like that. How about that? Good job. Okay. Good job, Jonna. Okay, we're going to do one more. We're going to do one more that's counterintuitive. So you're going to face him now. And let's say you're having a conversation saying, Brock, you really need to take your medication. And then, yeah. And so what is she going to do? She's going to step towards him, right? And push his arms away and then run away. You can run past him even. That's even more counterintuitive, depending on what's over there. Karen Mitchell's over there. That's a good place to go. Yeah, okay, good. So good job, you guys. That's great. So the moral of that story is that I had a really big funeral and a really long Gourmets for God that was delightful last night, and I had no time to prepare, so I have lots of tricks. That's what the moral of the story is. But anyway, the moral of that story is that you do something counterintuitive when somebody is crossing your boundaries. When somebody metaphorically is choking you, either this way or that way or this way or what have you, when somebody is getting in your face, you do something counterintuitive. You do something paradoxical, and that is you step towards them. You move closer. Who wants to do that? Ew. Right? Don't you want to run away and just tell them to get out of your life? You know, sometimes that is appropriate. But for the most part, particularly when it's, you know, a loved one, you step closer. In the situation that I was describing about the woman who was marketing her You Can Have Anything You Want seminar very aggressively here, my version of stepping closer would probably be to seek more information. Maybe it is a good seminar. I don't know. So I might go attend it at another church. Or I might have a conversation with her. And in the conversation, if I really, really got that it was not a good fit, I would probably do what I call stealth prayer. Stealth prayer gives her some hope of having a different experience. Stealth prayer is me saying, I see that you really, really, really want to market this seminar, and you really want to have it here, and unfortunately, it's not going to work for us, but I know that you have good ideas, and I know that there is a power and a presence that wants to live through you, and what if there are an infinite number of places where you could do this, and this one church doesn't have to be your source? See how beautiful that is? That is stepping towards her. That is stepping towards her and not countering her aggression with my aggression. So that's how it works. That's how it works. And I hope you've gotten something out of this today in terms of applying it to your own life. You know, one of the other paradoxes that I've noticed about boundaries is that the more we practice good boundaries, the less we need boundaries. What? Isn't that weird? The more we practice good boundaries, the less we need them because we become instantaneously compassionate and forgiving. Sort of like the story that Hugh read about the monk, you know. We don't really go into the mode of punishment. We become compassionate and forgiving, and yet we are also compassionate and forgiving of ourselves. You know, I've shared with this congregation before. Sorry, I forgot to tell you I was going to talk about you. you've heard it before. What? What's new? Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I've shared with you before that in almost 30 years of marriage, Hugh and I have different ideas about what a clean, say, kitchen looks like, right? And in the early days, I would find a bowl on the counter that didn't belong there, or a wrapper of something, or the milk left out of the refrigerator, and I just would be so insulted by that. If he really cared about me, that stuff would be where it belongs. He clearly does not care about me. Call the divorce lawyers. It's time to go. Gradually, I realized that there is this thing called male pattern blindness, and that men don't don't really that it's not deliberate. It doesn't have anything to do with caring. Raise your hand if you've got male pattern blindness. Raise your hand if you live with somebody with male pattern blindness. Okay. It's not personal. It's not personal at all. So I started just cleaning it up and just cleaning it up. And yet there was still this little tinge of resentment, a little tiny tinge of resentment. And then, just through the practice of good boundaries in other ways, I started noticing a change. The other day, I cleaned up the entire kitchen. It had not been cleaned really deeply for a long time, and I cleaned it probably because I had something I was supposed to write, so it seemed like a really good time to clean up the kitchen. So I cleaned it really deeply, and Hugh was out of town, and when he got back, he was eating dinner, and I just out of curiosity, there was no defensiveness in this at all, I just said, "So did you notice how clean the kitchen is?" And he goes, "No." "I'm oblivious." Yeah, good answer. It was so endearing. And so now, you know, I forgot when I was talking about the bowls on the counter, one of the things that used to drive me crazy was what I call the giant spaghetti massacre, which is when spaghetti sauce is made, which he makes a lot, and there's spaghetti sauce. Like a vision. We have spaghetti sauce on our ceiling. I don't know how it got there, but it's up there. And when I cleaned up the kitchen the other day, when I did the deep cleaning of the kitchen, I left the spaghetti sauce on the ceiling because I said, when I look at that, it reminds me of Hugh, and I love him dearly. Aww. See? So, anyway, I'm gonna hear about this at home, aren't I? So that's the thing with boundaries. And I hope you've gotten something out of this. You know, recognizing that you have a right to your wild and precious life, whether it's hula hooping or doing whatever it is, whatever the hula hoop metaphor stands for you, whether it's expressing yourself, whether it's having a relationship, whether it's moving into a new career path, you have a right to have all of that. That all belongs to you. In fact, much of that was divinely implanted in you, and you are supposed to express that. Okay, when others interfere with it in a way that is aggressive, or in a way that is not kind, or in a way that is insulting or hurtful, when others try and make you responsible for the way that they are feeling, you have a right to stand up. You have a right to say no to that. But it is much more effective if you don't try and drive out aggression with aggression, if you work with aggression, if you embrace it with your compassion and with your love. I'm going to close with a quote from Ernest Holmes that I liked, because it is such a beautiful statement of who we are and what we are supposed to be doing here. And he writes, "Life is not just something to be endured. It is to be lived in joy, in a fullness without limit." And so we don't have to let anything limit us. You know what? You can have what you want. You can have what you want. It just may come in a very different form. And chances are that person who is crossing your boundary is providing you an invitation to discover that form. So let's go within now and do some more self-discovery and celebrate the love that we are.